When I was young enough to do some thinking, I mean old enough to do some thinking, but young enough to not know that I didn't know anything, meaning I was a teenager. My parents sent me to Catholic school, both junior high, well, grade school, junior high, and high school. All the way through, I went to Catholic school. And I guess when I was young, I just went along with what my mom and dad said religion was all about. You know, we went to Mass and we did the whole thing. I didn't think much about it. But when I got into high school, of course, when I got into high school, it was the 60s. And everything was being questioned. And so I don't remember the process that I went through, but I remember enough to know that by the time I was a sophomore or junior in high school, I thought the whole religion thing was totally garbage. It didn't make sense to me. And I don't know if by personality type, or it was the culture of the time, or a combination of both. I've always been a person that questions and constantly asking why and how come and what does this mean. And I still remember being in high school classrooms of religion in the Catholic school. I'll never forget Father Kumba. I'm sure he's passed away by now. And the nuns who used to teach us. And I would never say anything, because in those days, nobody took anybody to court for slapping you around. They used to do that regularly, and I'm grateful that they did. But I would sit there, and none of that makes sense to me. You know, like when people say, and I still use this example a lot, when people say, God loves you. And I still remember thinking, so what? Isn't that nice? He loves me. So is my mama. Didn't feel anything, didn't make any difference in my life. Or the other one, don't you know that Jesus died for you? Why do you do that? I didn't ask him to. Why do you do that for? Or, you know, he came to save you. And that, I still remember sitting there in that classroom going, save me from what? Now, I've used this before, and the reason it's just so basic to me. You know, I've been a priest now for 38 years. And one of the things that I find is that, and I don't expect it to be different, because I didn't get it either. I think that whenever any priest or any parent preaches or teaches their faith, especially younger people, they don't get it. They don't get it. And I've often reflected on, well, why don't they get it? 'Cause I didn't get it. And I think the reason they don't get it is because you can't look at the central core of what it means to be a Christian. What it mean is why Jesus would have died, and what in God's green earth does being saved mean? What does it mean? I don't think you can get it until you get a little older. I mean, there are exceptions. They're kids. I've met kids who got it. Maybe they got it at different levels. But I certainly didn't. You know, that's why I have always used this example before. I use it incessantly. If you're swimming in a swimming pool and somebody jumps and the lifeguard comes and says to you, "I'm here to save you," you think he's crazy because you're having a good time. But if you start drowning 2 minutes later and you start going under and the same lifeguard jumps in and says exactly the same thing to you, all of a sudden, that's the best news you've ever heard. Same lifeguard, same message. You had no experience of drowning and being out of control before. And that's what makes it make sense. Well, as I was thinking of the readings and Advent season, these readings, you're not going to get them unless you can identify with some of the experiences that are being spoken about in the readings. Take the first reading from Isaiah. In the first reading from Isaiah, I mean, make sure I quote it correctly. Oh, it's Baruch. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Listen for my Baruch. The first sentence. Jerusalem, take off your robe of mourning and misery. Put on the splendor of the glory of God forever. Now, the first question that you should ask is, why is Jerusalem have robes of mourning and misery? What's happening that they are in mourning and misery? And then a little bit down. Up, Jerusalem. Stand up on the heights. Look to the east. Your children are coming, rejoicing. For the God has commanded that every lofty mountain be made low. Let the age-old depths and gorges be filled to the low, from the ground up, and that Israel may advance secure in the glory of God. Why? What's happening there? Jerusalem, take off your robe of mourning and misery. You see, what was happening in the ancient world and with Jerusalem is that they were constantly being conquered by alien peoples. As a matter of fact, they were conquered and sold into slavery during about 500 years before Christ. And they were in slavery. And even before that, Moses had to be sent in. And so the experience of the people is an experience of having lived through mourning and misery. Unless they had lived through mourning and misery, they wouldn't get that God was coming to save them. It wouldn't make sense to them. And the basis of understanding what does it mean to be saved depends to a large degree on your awareness of the predicament of being human. Now, you don't have to live in a country that has been conquered. Okay? Many of you who are older, and maybe some of you were in different wars, in World War II, or lost a loved one, or God only knows, even experience sickness and the death of a loved one. What I'm saying is, you know, the older you get, the tenuousness, the unpredictability of being human. I was just talking to Alicia before Mass. Alicia's one of my good friends, one of our parishioners. And this is your first Christmas really conscious of being away. Your husband died last year. How do you deal with that? What does it mean? And, you know, Alicia, myself, all of us, especially those of us who are older, you experience the fact that your body's falling apart. I know I'm 66, and I'm not even as old as Bob is. But I experience my body falling apart. And the question is, so what does this mean? Do I just keep on kind of making believe that everything's okay and take it one day at a time and yay? Is that it? Is there any meaning to what I've been through? Is there any meaning to, I'm 66, should I look back on my life, on the good times and the bad times? Should I look back on it and say that was any meaning to it? Or is it just one damn thing after another? And the word damn is not bad to say in church. It's actually a theological term. Right? Does it have any meaning? Is my future, as I get closer to death, does it have any meaning? Is it just kind of surviving until and putting up with whatever suffering I have to put up with until the day I die? And that's pretty much the same for you. Is it just that? And believe me, there are some religions in this world that, see, all religions have to answer that question. Every religion has to answer basically four questions. Where did I come from? What's the meaning of my life? What makes something right or wrong? And where am I going? Those four questions. Now, a lot of people, I think, and this is my opinion, the younger you are, the easier it is to live kind of waiting and responding to the excitement of every day or the dreams you have in the future. You know, it's easier the younger you are because you haven't experienced suffering a lot, most of us. And a lot of us still have the future ahead of us. And so you can dismiss the ultimate fate that you're going to endure and just sort of focus on your career, on money, on romance, on all that stuff. But what older people can tell you and is that it passes by real quickly. And even when you go through it, what was that? What was that all about? Is that it? As you lose people you love, as things happen, as you get sick, you know, where's this going? And you feel like you're drowning because you don't feel like you're going anywhere. And when you begins to dawn on you, because most of us, what we try to do is when that kind of feeling or thoughts come into our heads, we get busy doing something else. I don't want to think. So we either go shopping or, you know, work or anything, but you don't want to think. But when you allow yourself to think about it, you begin to sense the fact that if somebody doesn't pull us out of this, we really are in a heap of trouble. We really are in a heap of trouble because there's nothing to look forward to. There's ultimately, when you get older, you just begin to decompose. while you're still alive. It's funny. It's that old joke. It's an old joke of when people open, they finally dig up Beethoven's grave, and when they open the coffin, the skeleton gets up and says, "Close the door, I'm decomposing." It's a bad joke. But it's kind of, I use that word because it's true. Think about, what does decomposing mean? It's falling apart. It's coming apart. Any of us who are a little older, you know you're coming apart. And every time you go to the doctor, he gives you a detailed report on how you're falling apart. And you know where this is heading. And so, all of a sudden, when you hear that, take off your robe of suffering. Take off. Look up. I'm going to make smooth. That's what the message of John the Baptist is. I'm going to level the road. I'm going to remove the obstacles. The hills, I'm going to flatten them down so you have no obstacles. And there's a Messiah coming. There's somebody coming to save you. When you get the fact that you're in trouble, then you get the fact that you need to be saved. But until you get that fact, you don't get the other. But I think that process is a process in which God, through His grace, slowly makes it dawn on you. And dawn on you more and more and more. I know that's what happened to me. That's why even today, you know, when I teach teenagers, every Sunday at 3 o'clock, 3:15, I teach juniors and seniors. I have a class of about 50 juniors and seniors. And I'm standing there in front of all those kids for an hour and a half. And that's one of the toughest experiences I have during the entire week. Because they sit there, and no matter how alive you are, they sit there and do this. And you say, "Are you alive?" And you almost want to get out there and just slap them around. Of course, I'd be sued. But the point is, why do I keep doing it if they keep going, "Oh"? Because I did that. Because I did that. And because I'm grateful that the priests and the nuns and Father Kumba and all those other people that tried to get the message of the gospel into my thick skull, I'm grateful that they didn't give up. Because when it was time and God said, "Okay, now," the message was inside in the back of my brain. And the seed had been planted even though it had not begun to sprout. But at a particular time in history, it began to sprout. So, this season of Advent, the reason I've talked about this today is because that's what the season of Advent's for. It's for you to take a little time. I know Christmas is coming and we're all going to be busy doing all kinds of stuff. But it's a time of reflection. A time of, you know, that's why the candles are burning like that. Two candles and purple and all the colors, everything is happening so that it's telling you, think about it. Where's your life going? What does it mean? What does it mean that you suffer? Is there any purpose to this? And the answer is yes. Believe me, there's been lots of religions that say no. I was thinking today about Buddhists. And in Buddhism, the only solution to suffering is to not care. In other words, no attachment to anything. And so if you're not attached to anything, nothing makes you suffer. It's a great answer, I guess. But what's the Christian answer and God's answer to us is, I'm coming. I'm not going to let you go. I'm not. I didn't create you so that you would be frustrated. I created you to be happy with me. And even though you guys have screwed it up royally, I'm coming to rescue you. I don't know about you, but now that I'm older, I get it. I get it. And it is definitely good news.